Medical information obtained from our website or on the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If you have, or you suspect you might, have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a healthcare provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of the sports doctor, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Hey, everybody, welcome live from Chicago. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. All things sports medicine, fitness, and wellness brought to you by Global Schoolwear, school uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger, Hurdle Apparel, high-tech socks, LER, Lower Extremity Review, and MVP Parent Magazines, and UK Health Radio. We've got a great doubleheader. Dr. Nick Denubili. He's a prominent sports orthopedic surgeon in the Philadelphia area with Premier. He is an author. He's got a history with the Eagles, the Philadelphia Ballet. He's been on numerous times. He's returning along with Saul Blinkoff. He's a film director, animator, got a long history with Disney, and is an exciting keynote motivational speaker. Then the sports doctor's in. Some Bob to Bob wisdom, some emails. Dr. Nick, welcome back to the Sports Doctor.
Hey, how are you?
Great to have you back. Give us some quickie background on yourself and that the sports orthopedic surgeon world.
Okay, wow, that's I can go on forever. But basically, got into sports medicine when it was a very early new field. I was going to be a hand surgeon, and then this field emerged where you combine fitness and athletes and all the things I love in life. I've always embraced. I've exercised my whole life. I've been an athlete my whole life, and instead of being a hand surgeon, I said, I want to do this. So started in sports medicine, worked up through the ranks, taking care of high school teams and some college players, and then finally got to the pros where I was the Sixers doc for many years. I used to cover the Philadelphia Flyers, been Pennsylvania Ballets for 40 years, taking care of dancers, and they changed their name recently to Philadelphia Ballet. Go figure. And then always along the way, even though I was a surgeon, physician, taking care of patients, I always wanted to do more with promoting fitness and exercise. So I got involved with, the President's Fitness Council and Arnold Schwarzenegger many, many years ago. He's a lifelong friend now, over 30, almost 40 years close with Arnold, and working on the Surgeon General's report on physical activity and health, and try to, writing books in that genre, outside of my everyday, work.
It's interesting because it's been one of the big features for decades on the Sports Doctor, the whole idea of whether it's the prevention of injury and dealing with these problems at whatever level, and way on the other side, enhancing performance. And when we throw in the pressure of team physicians and being involved with professional sports, that's a whole different world. When it comes to all sorts of different aspects of the game. And that's why, I always ask you guys how your sports psychology skills are, Dr. Nick.
You know what? You're right. Yeah, to paraphrase our hero, I know you love him too, Yogi Berra. When he's talked about baseball being like 90% physical and the other half mental. So he wasn't a great mathematician, but I think he was on to something.
I was exciting. Just this past weekend, of course, a crazy story with Yogi, but his granddaughter, Lindsay, who's a great sports reporter in so many ways in her own right, and she's been a numerous guest of mine in the museum and all the excitement going on with it and that feature story on 60 Minutes and the getting involved in the tremendous history and that documentary, It Ain't Over. And but some of his witticisms were, and that was, I think, really one of them. One of the outstanding ones.
Yeah, and Lindsay's amazing. Lindsay's amazing. And I taped that. I didn't watch it yet, but I absolutely need to watch that 60 minute segment on Yogi.
Yes, and then we had, it's interesting. It's the one of your colleagues, of course, the great team orthopedist of the Yankees. He's been a numerous guest of mine, Dr. Chris Ahmad. He's been writing some stuff. Is this the 50th anniversary of Tommy John surgery?
Wow, I didn't know it would be that long. That's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah,
you
have
amazing.
To quote me if I got the year wrong, but I think, and that's one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about, which was, you know, whether we're talking the senior population and the challenges of, you know, 80s, the new 60, and the fact that people want to stay as active as they can, as long as they can, or whether it's dealing with the tremendous pressure of youth sports and the families and those kinds of situations. So you wear a lot of hats, don't you?
I do. And you're talking about, you know, a country where we have two extremes. We have so many people who are doing nothing. You know, they're sedentary. They're destroying their health. And then there's others that are pushing their bodies and their minds to the limits all the time. And whether it's the master's athlete trying to compete with a body that's failing, and my book Framework was about a lot of that, or the youth sports where the kids have dreams, the parents have different dreams and pressures and, you know, scholarships. And so we got the two extremes, you know, of people doing nothing and people pushing to the break point.
You know, in the area, again, of youth sports, one of the reasons I co-authored the book with Hall of Fame volleyballer Sharkey Dartman, hashtag Hey Sports Parents, is everybody listening in capital letters, the epidemic of youth sports overuse injuries, both physically and mentally. And the more talented the kid is, the more many times the pressure gets magnified between his family, his parents, his coaches. And again, when we're working with multimillionaire owners and athletes and professional sports teams, there's got to be all sorts of pressure in so many different directions on these kids.
Absolutely. Look at this female phenom, Caitlin. I mean, I think, was she in sixth grade and she was being offered college scholarships? Now, she did it and did it with grace and poise. I mean, she seems to, you know, have a pretty good balance in her life, but a lot, you know, it leaves a body count. Not everybody glides through that, as you know. The kids,
yes,
the
topic you and I talked about numerous times because I know that you've been involved in the world of ballet and dance, and you and I would talk about the fact that some of the best athletes of all sports were the dancers, and some of the different demands that they were going through. It's funny, you know, Caitlin Clark, a phenomenon. When you look at her physically, it's amazing that she's such a good athlete. You know, she's kind of slim, kind of wiry, and she could fool you when you take a look at her physically.
I know, absolutely. She doesn't look the part, but boy, she puts the time in, and her legs are strong, and you probably snuck some orthotics into her sneakers without her knowing it, and that's why she doesn't miss.
It's the name of the game. You want to be two steps quicker. It's all about alignment.
And it helps balance. You know, people don't realize that, you know, the balance issues people have when they age. Sometimes an orthotic can just, that little bit of pronation where you start rolling in, you know, that you can't control, but you can control it with a good orthotic and with a lot of good exercise and balance.
Yes.
And fall prevention.
Well, thing we like to stress a lot, whether I'm talking about the book or I'm talking about some of the things I had to exercise areas I want all athletes to pay attention to, especially youth athletes, whatever their age, whatever their sport, whatever their level. And number one is strengthen your feet and ankles. The ankles still are the most commonly injured area. That's not news to you. And sometimes it's a real problem. So we want to pay attention routinely. And then we really want to pay attention to balance and foot mechanics. Again, imagine one kid's got high arches, another kid's flat-footed, this other kid over here, he's knock-kneed. The other kid, he's got leg lengths and balances. Are they in the best shoe for them? So many times we see the blend of exactly what you're talking about becoming a big deal, and especially when you're dealing with, 7 footers, 275, 280 pounds, and you realize he's playing shortstop. Right.
Correct. And, you know, with the kids, too, everybody, the parents, everybody needs to realize they're not just small adults. Their body's different. They, you know, they have growth plates. Their muscles and tendons aren't mature. Their brains certainly are not mature. They're prone to a lot of stress and burnout and, you know, and expectations. So, yeah, but sometimes they look so good. You treat them like they're an adult pro athlete, and whether it's the parents, the coaches. And it's not when you and I grew up, it was the coaches that pressured us. I don't think it's much the coaches anymore. The parents are the – tend to be the pressure cookers, and then they can be on two or three teams, right? So it gets amplified. You got all that going on, not just with their school team,
well,
but their travel team.
Yes, plus, Dr. Nick, we know every therapist, doctor, trainer knows children should grow up playing multiple sports. And if we want them to use different parts of the body and not specialize too early, but there's a chapter in my book, it's called The Prodigy Sports. Think gymnastics, or my world, figure skating, or again, ballet, where you have 11, 12-year-olds, this is all they want to do. They do not want to play other sports. So sometimes we throw that challenge in the middle. It's very legitimate. Where do people find out? What's a good website to find out about your group, Dr. Nick?
Okay, so my website is drnick.com, just drnick.com. But our group, which is one of the largest in the nation, providing great orthopedic care all over the region, it's premierortho.com. So, but if you go to drnick.com, I have links to Premier Ortho as well. But we've got a great group and busy.
Oh, you guys, you know, and it's interesting because 95% of sports medicine isn't surgery. It shocks a lot of people. In reality, it's all sorts of other aspects, from A to Z. And I definitely wanted to touch on the importance of the attention that the surgical world is paying attention to, Dr. Nick, with the painkiller opioid challenges that have been, upfront and personal for so long, the whole pain killing scenario. What are some of your thoughts now on how medicine has really, really started paying attention post-op, post-injury when it comes to painkillers?
Yeah, you know, this could be a whole segment because I have thoughts all over the place on this and a lot of experience with it. So I am a big believer that you want to minimize the use of these narcotics. And luckily, we've gotten better with smaller, minimally invasive surgeries. We use blocks now, anesthesia blocks. We put certain medicines, whether you're operating on a knee or a shoulder, you can put them into the joint to reduce the pain. You do a nerve block. There are non-narcotic things like Toradol that you can give IV, and then for a few days post-op.
So there's alternatives, and I think, the attention that's being paid to the importance. Again, 25 years ago, someone has surgery, they go home with a prescription for 35 pain pills, and they run into all sorts of trouble. Now maybe they give, four. And, the pain pills really, really have an area when indicated. I guess it's been an educational challenge for everybody involved as we've seen the importance of paying attention to this.
Well, it has in that we're giving less and less. But I always tell the moms and the parents, look, this is the one time in life you might need it. Those first few days, if you get too far behind in pain, then you're not doing the early rehab you need to get the knee moving.
Yes,
or
I
to
think
start
that's
walking.
A big point.
So you're walking
a
tightrope.
Yes, that it definitely has a place, but the idea is to pay attention to being, well educated about all of that. I know you made some comments. It's been great so far. We're looking with the Philadelphia 76ers. I know I read your comment. Matter of fact, I commented about it with the Joel Embiid. The great player, he commented, I think, on the knee. I don't think you did his knee procedure, did you?
I did not, no. I was a Sixers doctor many years ago, so, their doctors usually can't comment. So when somebody goes down, they'll reach out to somebody like me who can go on the record as to what I think should happen. And I said from day one he should have surgery for that because they were thinking of maybe waiting on it. But, lateral meniscal tear on a big guy like that, it's not going to get better. It was a tear in an area that won't heal, and if he keeps coming down on it, it's going to be a bigger tear. Then he loses more meniscus. So he did have the surgery, and I predicted, he should have been back 6 or 8 weeks. It almost to the day he came back on time. He people were saying he might be out the season, but the unfortunate thing, I think he came back a little out of shape. And I don't know that that was necessary. If you work really hard, you often can keep your fitness up while you're rehabbing. But,
it's a real challenge. And, of course, again, it's a great example of the kinds of pressures when we talk about, again, the professional level or the serious the crazy world of college sports that we're looking at, these pressures. And many times we see long-term problems post-injury because that athlete didn't pay enough attention to rest and recovery, and was rushed back, whether it was himself or herself or their parents or coaches. And when you're a multi-million dollar organization, you know, sometimes we'll see that we're too soon. But I think you were right on the money. We got our fingers crossed with this guy.
Yeah, I got lucky with that one. But, you know, one last thought on the opioids. I'd be remiss to not say this. And I think it's so important that we limit the use. But I also think our politicians overreacted. And they made it they put so many things on doctors to take all these courses every year, to use databases, to do all these things as if we're the problem. And, you know, if there are a few doctors that are a problem, go after them, shut them down. But the
I think that's a big point.
They,
you know, I agree.
They're
where doctors, doctors who needed to prescribe it were scared because there was so much pressure with this that side of it. I'm really glad that that you brought that up, which was something that I think was very, very notable.
You know, politicians overreact. They overreact.
Yes. You know, when we're talking about patients with chronic pain and chronic discomfort, I knew the time would fly. It always does with Dr. Nick DiNubile, orthopedist, Philadelphia. Nick, give us quickly again where they could find out about you and all the stuff you're doing.
Sure. I'm on drnick.com, drnick.com. My framework series of books about if you want a body that's going to hold up over time are great ones. And Premier Ortho is our group for anybody in the region who might need all sorts of orthopedic musculoskeletal, you know, work or advice.
Fantastic. All right, Dr. Nick, thanks so much. Of course, we'll be back sometime soon. And
Thank you.
Hold on, everybody. It's the Sports Doctor. Hold on, Nick. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Bob Weil, a sports doctor. I'm excited to announce the release of my new book, co-written with Sharkey Zartman, hashtag Hey Sports Parents, an essential guide for any parent with a child in sports. You know, Sharkey is a former Hall of Fame volleyball player. She's the mom of two daughters who became Division I volleyball players. Together, we have over 70 years of combined youth sports experience. The goal of the book? Give you the essential tools and guidance to make your experience as a sports parent the best it could be. Hashtag Hey Sports Parents is divided into four sections. The first section, Sports Parenting 101. Sharkey talks everything about parenting, about coaching, that whole interaction between parents and coaches, coaching your own kid. What are the things to really pay attention to? The second section is the Sports Doctor's In, yours truly. My discussion of injury prevention and treatment, choosing the best shoes, youth sports and drugs, essential exercises, the dilemma of youth football, orthotics. Third section, experts speak out. We bring together eight different experts in nutrition and sports performance and mental training in all aspects of coaching in that section. The last section is the parents' perspective, some insights from about a half a dozen parents of athletes. So everyone, hey, get out your megaphone, spread the word. Now available on Amazon. Order now. You'll be more confident. So will your young athlete. Hashtag, hey sports parents. Hey, everybody, welcome back. Live from Chicago, it's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist, and I want to welcome Saul Blinkoff. He's a film director, animator, he's got a long history with Disney. He's an exciting keynote motivational speaker. You know how we pay attention to the mental game on the Sports Doctor. Saul, welcome to the Sports Doctor.
Thanks, Bob. So good to be with you and your audience.
Give us some background on yourself, a quickie background on yourself that led you into this whole mental game of speaking world.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you. So look, you know, I grew up on the East Coast. I'm a New Yorker. I was 11 years old. I saw the movie E.T. And it made me go, that's what I want to do someday. I want to make movies. And, you know, like I said, I grew up in New York. I didn't know any creative people. I didn't know anyone in the film business. People I know were doctors, lawyers, owned businesses, teachers. I didn't even know that was a job you could have. All I knew is when I looked up to the screen, it called to me. I'm like, that's what I want to do. I want to make movies. And I also loved drawing a lot. I loved art. But when I saw that, I'm going to be a filmmaker. So I went to the library, which, of course, is a building that my kids will never go to because, you know, they have the internet, right? We say in the olden days, we went to a building to get information. So I go to a library and I get books on cameras, lenses, storyboard. And I found out that Steven Spielberg, the director of E.T., made movies on the weekends. So I got my twin sister, my older brother, kids in the neighborhood, and started making movies, murder movies, monster movies. I was going to be a filmmaker. And then when I got into high school, somebody comes up to me one day. They're like, what are you going to do when you get out of high school? I said, well, I'm going to be a filmmaker. They're like, no, you don't want to do that. Because if you want to do that, you're going to have to move out to Hollywood. And Hollywood is filled with strange weirdos. They looked at me and said, you don't want to end up a weirdo, do you? And I said, no, I don't.
Yeah, let alone with your New York accent. You know what I mean?
That's right. But it's amazing, you know, I gave up on my dream right there. And I know that we're talking about mindfulness and the mind game. And that's actually a really good idea to focus on for a moment, is how often in our lives that we allow other people to say something and change the trajectory that we're on in our lives. And it could be a wonderful thing. People can uplift us. But at the same time, if we're giving other people that control, then they can also, you know, make us feel like we can't achieve something. And ultimately, the goal has to be that we really define how we feel about ourselves. Well, at that point, I gave up on my dream. That's it. My parents were like, what are you going to do? I'm like, well, I'll go back to drawing. My parents are so unbelievably supportive. They hired an art teacher to come to our home. And she would teach me to draw from life. And she taught me the first day, drawing is about seeing, you know, developing your eye to look at the world a certain way. And I remember, you know what she said, Bob? She said, I want you to go to restaurants and draw people in cafes. So I brought a sketchbook. I went to different cafes. After a couple weeks, I showed her all the drawings. She said, I like the people that you're drawing, but I got a question. I said, yeah. She says, how come none of them have hands? I said, oh, yeah. I didn't draw the hands because it's hard to draw hands. She goes, oh, okay. Then you know what you're going to do? Every night before you go to bed, you're going to draw your hand from a different position. And in 6 months, I got really good at drawing hands. And she taught me one of the most valuable lessons that any of us will ever hear. If we're going to be great, if we're going to win, if we're going to accomplish our limitless potential, then we need to find out what our weakness is and have the singular mindset to turn it into our strength. As a matter of fact,
those are the kinds of educational points that we pay big attention to. Again, whether your son or daughter is the best athlete in the country, whether you are a high-performance athlete, whether you're a coach, whether you're in that family dynamics, when we talk about all this pressure on these kids, both physically and mentally, and that's one of the areas we really pay big, big attention to. Because there's an epidemic in capital letters of youth sports overuse injuries, too much, too aggressive,
overzealous
parents. And that's why we always ask whatever the expert is, wherever they are from around the world, whatever their vocation is, I always ask them how their sports psychology skills are, Saul.
That's right. So important. You know, I'll tell you a quick anecdote. I grew up in the 90s. And so that means I actually do know with complete clarity who the greatest basketball player that ever lived is. You know who it is, right, Bob?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
of course,
good.
We're assuming it's MJ, but go ahead.
That's exactly who it is, and there's nothing to assume. And if anyone's listening right now and you think it's LeBron, I'd like you to turn your radio to another channel. This isn't for you. Right? So it's MJ. He's the greatest, and there's a true story told about him. First year in the NBA, look, he already was making so much money. He already had Air Jordan sneakers made before he even stepped on the court.
But the great first movie, year,
Air. Great Air. Movie, right? Air, yeah. But after one game, some sports writer from Sports Illustrated, I don't remember his name, comes up to Mike and says, Michael, You're a scoring machine, but your defense is not so strong. Do you know what Michael could have said to the guy? Dude, could you get out of my face? I'm Michael Jordan. Your kid's probably wearing my Air Jordan sneakers. He probably has my posters up over his bed. Could you get out of my face? But that's not what Jordan said. Jordan said years later in an interview that when that sports writer said to him, you don't have a defensive game, I guess I better work harder on defense. And he did. And 2 years later, one player was named Defensive Player of the Year, number 23, Michael Jordan. You know why?
I guess he paid attention to what his weakness might be.
Exactly.
Which is the point. Even at the world's highest level, it's a great point. And again, whether it's we're paying attention to school systems, Saul, whether we're paying attention to sports leagues, clubs, traveling clubs.
It's all the same. It's like, well, do we want to grow?
This is the kind of word we want to get out. We want to be able to get these kids and their coaches and families to understand that there are things that can be done to really pay attention to training yourself mentally or paying
attention. That's exactly right.
Do you feel that we're getting somewhere when it comes to awareness of those kinds of situations? I know you recently spoke to 400 high schoolers. I was going to ask you, how'd that go?
it went amazing. I mean, look, one of the challenges with high schoolers today is they have expectations of perfection. They have expectations of a limited amount of investment. They don't foresee that they're going to have to really struggle. And I know if there's any parents listening right now, you're going, that's exactly my son. That's my daughter. Like, we really worked so much harder than them. We had to prove so much. We had so much more. Today, even in businesses, you know, look, I work in animation, and you have like 20-year-olds coming into these companies, and they just want to be there for a couple years. They don't even have the mindset that they're going to invest 10 years into anything. And one of the tools that I like to share with students is very specific. If you want to be great at something, whatever it is in life, then you're going to have to really push through struggle. You know, my son said to me the other day, he's like, Dad, I want to do track. Do you think it's going to be easy? I said, well, it depends how good you want to be. If you want to be good
at it,
he's
got to strengthen his feet and ankles and pay big attention to foot mechanics. That's pearl
right.
for the week.
I like that.
Sports doctor.
Thank you for that.
Well,
but I said to him, if you want to be good at something, it'll be easy. If you want to be great at something, it's going to be hard. If you want to be the greatest ever, you're going to have to sweat. You're going to have to bleed. You're going to have to go through pain. And what I love, and this is really a mindful tool for our listeners, is that if you have the mindset beforehand that something is going to be difficult, and it will if you want to be great at it, then you need to first know that it's going to be difficult and you're able to handle it. It's motivating. It doesn't surprise you that it's hard. You know beforehand. But it's the same thing with marriage. It's with anything. If you think it's the end of a Disney movie and you're going to get married and not have to put work in, you're not going to have a successful marriage. Anything that we want to be...
Everybody was to live happily ever
after. Oh, that's what you thought, right?
So
you know what? So Bob, going back to my...
What's the best website people can find out about you and your work?
Oh, okay. The website is saulblinkoff.com. S-A-U-L, like Better Call Saul. And then it's blinkoff.com. You can see everything I do. I have the podcast that I do called Life of Awesome. I actually interviewed George Foreman. What a story he has. You can go check out that episode and more.
Yes, what a fantastic story he's got. You know, the world champion when he was close to 50 or something like that, let alone his grills.
It's really absolutely.
Exciting stuff.
Bob, you want to hear something amazing?
That.
I actually asked George, what's the legacy you want the world to remember about you? What's the legacy you want your children to remember about you? And I will tell you, he didn't mention his grill. He didn't mention his boxing, his Olympic, nothing. He said one thing. He said, I want the world to remember that I love humanity, that I love to make a difference, that walking down the street, I could smile at someone and make their day a little bit brighter. That's what my life was about. And what's even more incredible, and you got to listen to this is unbelievable. While I was editing the podcast episode with him, afterwards, I went and I found his fights with Joe Frazier and all these other fights, and I edited all the audio from the fights into the podcast episode. And I discovered something so unbelievable. The first night, he becomes heavyweight champion of the world. He's 20 years old, beats Smokin' Joe Frazier. In that moment that he is the champion, he becomes a millionaire. His whole life has changed. Think about the emotion, and those people listening who know sport.
Keep that in mind, Saul, because we're going to come right back. It's the Sports Doctor. We're talking with Saul Winkoff. I want to ask you about some of your movies. It's the Sports Doctor, everybody.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world. And hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Hey, everybody, we're back live from Chicago. Another few minutes with Saul Winkoff. The animator from the world of Disney, as with his movies. And the movie where your son played one of the lead characters, Saul, what was that?
Yeah, my son, when he was six, became the voice for that main character in the film. Yeah, because, you know, you grew up in Hollywood, and that's kind of the Hollywood story. But it's amazing, like, for me, when I started with that art teacher I mentioned in the earlier segment, and she taught me to overcome that weakness, I knew I was going to be an artist. And then when I saw the movie The Little Mermaid, that was it. That's when I was cinched on my dream. My dream was to become a Disney animator. I was a junior in Hewlett High School in the Five Towns, and my mom took me on a trip to Disney World just to ask the Disney cast members, that's what they call their employees, how her son could become a Disney animator. And I remember we're walking around Disney World. We're getting onto the ride. It's a small world. We're stepping on the boat. And the Disney lady is like, how many in your party? I'm like, two. My mom says, by the way, my son wants to be a Disney animator. Can you help him? It was very embarrassing. The lady is like, yes. Man, this
well,
is
you know,
a boat
you never
ride?
Know. You know, the so many children grow up, they don't have a clue. You know, one of my very, very close friends, his daughter, is a magician, an illusionist, and she's 4 years old. She's watching Siegfried and Roy
there
on television and decides,
you never know.
Sort of like you did with the art teacher, maybe, like our relative Aiden when he had his art teacher that Arlene got him as a present when he was over 8 years old. Who would know? You know, go on to pay that kind of attention. And it's quite a story, again, when you're talking about either motivating, you know, businesses and life on the left, or you're talking about the high-performance world of athletics or sports.
Absolutely.
And
it's
you're
all
trying
the same.
To, you know, trying to, my figure skaters, gosh, 25 years ago, were doing visualization. Medicine didn't know how to spell the word, let alone include it. So
that
mental side is something that we have to pay much more attention to, right, Saul?
That's right. That's right. And then when I saw that film and I had my dream, I went to one of these art schools. It was one of the schools that Disney recruits from. And the first week in the school, we found out that a representative from the Walt Disney Studios was coming to our college to give us a presentation on what Disney was looking for in their portfolio. So he gets up on the stage, and by the way, this guy's over 70 at the time, one of the original animators on Sleeping Beauty. He used to hang out with Walt Disney. I mean, it was amazing just to see this guy. And he gets up on the stage, and there's an auditorium filled with over 600 students, every freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior. And he looks out to us and he says, before I tell you how to get into Disney, let me just ask, show of hands, how many of you want to work at Disney one day? And let me tell you, every single hand went up. And he said, just so you know, out of the 600 of you in this room, maybe, just maybe four of you will ever work there. That's how competitive it is. And when he said that, I remember thinking one thing. I wonder who the other three are going to be. Because in life, right, in life, you either believe in yourself that you can accomplish or you don't. And I mean, deep down, do we really believe that we can grow, that we can reach the potential that we're meant for? I believed in myself. Look, I worked really hard to try to get into Disney, and I got rejected. I tried a second year, rejected. And after that point, I gave up on my dream, Bob, because my best friend had gotten in. His name was Andy. He got into Disney. I got rejected twice in a row, and I thought, you know what? I'm just not talented enough. I'm just not good enough. I gave up. I go to another movie that changes my life. Let's see how well you know your movies, Bob. I see a movie, it's a true story about a guy who's 5 feet tall. He doesn't have an ounce of athletic ability, and
Rudy.
He wants to play football. There you go. Amazing movie. Is that an amazing movie?
I'm glad I got your notes before the show, you know what I mean?
No. Oh, you got the notes?
No, I didn't. But of course,
what a movie, right?
Yeah, what's interesting, you know, it's a powerful, powerful story. Because when I have dealt with and talked to some of the world's great athletes who knew very, very early and how the mental game and the problems associated. Look at Simone Biles, the last Olympics, and Michael Phelps, the greatest athletes in the world talking about mental health and that whole topic. You know, it's been taboo for forever. So
that's
I think, again, your side of it also, which is the paying attention, especially if you have, you know, again, the pressures where you have aspiring young athletes, you know, whether it's scholarships or that, the money, the finance challenges in order to be able to. That was a great, story.
And
that you
know,
wondered who the other three were.
That's right. That's right. But when I see that movie, Rudy, and by the way, you watch that movie, Rudy. And I relate to this, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners do as well. You know, the hardest part of the work that we do really is the mental game. That really is the hardest part. Okay, yeah, you put the discipline in, you have to work out, and you have to practice and figure out what your strengths and weaknesses and have a good coach, and all those things are true. But it's all the mind. It's the mindset as we approach any of these struggles in life. You know, one time I remember we were driving somewhere with our kids. We were going to go on a trip, and we packed up the whole car. We set the navigator, it was like a 3-hour drive. And right when I went out, I wasn't focused, and I made the wrong turn. Now,
we are live. The joy of live radio. I think we got interrupted there for a few minutes. I don't know if there's a storm in Texas or whatever. We're talking with Saul. Blink off. We were talking the mental game, the whole motivational world when we might have gotten interrupted, but it'll put it back together. So, Saul, I wanted to follow up on what we were talking about, which was the fact of the not only the awareness of how important the whole mental game, whatever topic that we're talking about, but the education, the second part of letting students, parents know this is something that needs the attention to be paid. The earlier, the better.
That's right. Yeah, the earlier, the better. And I think one of the big qualities that parents have to instill in their children is allowing kids to fail and knowing that failure is the only way to learn. That concept. Now, parents are listening right now, and some of you are going to be like, yeah, of course I encourage my kid to fail and learn. Now, think about that for a moment. When your kid does something really well, gets an A, scores a goal, how do you react? Probably big, a lot of energy, excitement. You'll take a picture, you'll text the whole family. Everybody knows about it. How do you react when the kid fails? Oh, you're not texting that picture out. You're not giving them a party for that. So you may say to your kid, of course I encourage you to fail because that's how you learn. But really, the energy that we give our children when they fail has to be at the same level if they see failure as a way to grow and to learn. That's the only way. That's the mindset. Kids can't just be like, I got to impress my parents and people around me by doing well. No, you want to impress your parents. You want to impress people around you. Grow. Learn. Be someone that learns.
You know, that, again, is such an important part. And if we switch over again to the coach's side, again, in that relationship between the young boy and girl who's playing soccer or playing tennis or whatever the sport happens to be, and the fact that the more talented that boy or girl is, the more sometimes the pressures mount, then it's interesting. My first guest today, Dr. Danubili, the orthopedic surgeon from the 76ers and the Philadelphia Eagles and whatever, and he was talking about how for so many years, it was coaches were the problem where the pressure was, and how over the not that long distant future, it's become the parents regarding the big time pressure that might be instilled on these kids. So this is again why we want the kind of education, the reality, and some of these things to be paid attention to. The earlier, the better. You know, it sounds so important that you be taught in elementary school, is it?
Yeah, and absolutely true. And also, you have to ask parents also, what's your goal for your kid? What is your goal? Why do you want them involved in sports? Oh, because your kid enjoys it? Okay, from a child's point of view, a teenager even, we want them to excel at it because they enjoy it and they love it. But ultimately, we want them to learn life skills, character building, leadership that they will apply to their lives well off the field for the rest of their lives. And that's why winning should never come before character building through learning discipline. Those have to be the goals for our kids. Sports is ultimately a means to an end, and that is building the character that they will have for the rest of their lives.
You know, it's been a mission of mine for all these decades to include that very point, whether it's using the point to saying, hey, listen, this is about kids and they have to have fun. They have to enjoy what they're doing. To the importance in various sports organizations at all levels, understanding what you were just talking about, that the character building side of youth sports is a very important part of it, you know, and not so much attention on winning and performance. And I, you know, there's a lot of good stuff going on. We have a documentary coming out, Joe Franco from Chesapeake Films, called Where Our Children Play, The Challenge of Youth Sports. Been very involved with years. And that was one of the reasons he was a sports dad, when he saw so much negativity and he wanted to somehow bring into the mix exactly some of the things that you're stressing.
But I want to say one thing differently. It's not that character building is an important part of it. It is the most important part of it. It is the most important part of it. That's the filter we need to look at it through. You know, I was starting to tell you before that I got to interview George Foreman at one point. He's in my podcast. By the way, the first podcast guest I ever had is actually the real Rudy Rudiger. So I encourage your listeners to check out that podcast, Life of Awesome. I think it's the fourth or fifth episode I did. He's the first interview I ever did, and you got to hear him tell his story of how he achieved his dream.
I'm looking forward to it.
Incredible.
You'll get a visit from the sports doctor.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. That's right. But let me tell you this amazing thing I discovered about George Foreman. The night that he became heavyweight champion and beat Smokin' Joe Frazier, the elation, the emotion, the excitement of becoming a millionaire and winning at arguably one of the greatest sports triumphs that a human could have, boxing, heavyweight champion of the world. And in that moment, it's like the end of a Rocky movie, Bob. He's standing on the ring. Everyone's crowding around him. It's loud. Photographers everywhere.
He knocked Joe Frazier off his feet. He knocked him off his feet. I remember it.
That's right. You remember it, right? Incredible.
Yes.
So he knocks him down. A minute later, a sportscaster comes to George, puts a microphone in his face and says, George, you just became heavyweight champion of the world. What's next for you? What's next? And George says, without blinking an eye, next is I want to tell every kid out there, every teenager out there, that you can accomplish anything with hard work. And the guy hears him. the guy with the microphone hears him and doesn't like that answer. And he goes, no, George, I mean in the ring, George. What's next in the ring? And George responds beautifully, the world is my ring. You know what he's teaching us? You think that now he becomes heavyweight champion in the world, and now look what he has, money, notoriety, fame. He didn't see it that way. He saw him becoming world champion means one thing. You know what I have now? I have an opportunity. I have a responsibility to impact another human being.
Yeah, he ended up being,
it's incredible.
Again, I'm going to throw Mike Tyson in there. He ended up being much more of an educated, resourceful person than people gave him credit for. I mean, George Foreman really, in so many different areas, I'm not surprised to hear the story that as a thinker, he was way ahead of what a lot of us gave him credit for.
He really was.
You know, when you look at him as a jock, let alone as a fighter, you know?
That's right. That's right. And you guys should go look tonight on YouTube. Go check out that video of that fight. Watch the end. Watch what happens. It's an incredible thing. That's what tells you. That's his character. Did he put the discipline to becoming heavyweight champion? Yeah, but his character was intact. And by the way, his character was intact whether he won or not.
And he lasted, really, he won into his 50s. I knew that this would be exciting stuff. It's really, really educational. I want to thank Saul Bleekoff again. Saul, give us quickly, where's the best Life of Awesome? Where's the best place to find out about all your stuff, your podcast, et cetera?
Thank you so much, Bob. Yes, Saul, S-A-U-L, Bleekoff.com is my website. The podcast is there. The podcast is called Life of Awesome. It's on Apple. It's on Spotify. It's everywhere you listen to podcasts. And then, of course, I travel the world as a motivation and inspirational speaker for corporations.
Yeah, you're on our roster,
you can find out.
You're definitely on the roster for the Sports Doctor. And
check out my Disney. Check out my Disney show.
The Sports Doctor will make a visit to your podcast. Well, thank you so much. Everybody, we'll be right back.
Thank you.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Hey, everybody, it's the Sports Doctor is in segment, where we preview some upcoming guests and topics, and a little Dr. Bob wisdom, a baseball blue book question. Great stuff coming up. Again, we're going to catch up on the documentary Where Our Children Play, The Challenge of Youth Sports with Joe Franco. He'll be back next week. Let us know when this is going to happen. Again, it's just going to be a great documentary. Proud to be a part of it. Then we're going to speak with Dr. Rachel Hughes. She is a pediatric oncologist. She's a real champion. I'm a longtime member of St. Jude's. That's the whole area of pediatric cancer. We really want to get some great information and talk to Dr. Hughes about that whole world. The following week, we're going to have returning sports pharmacy with Jessica Beal-Stahl. You know, I just did an article for them. I think it comes out next month on the role of sports podiatry and her world of sports pharmacy. And she'll be back joining us. And then we're going to talk about the crazy world and challenges of college admissions, the whole mental side of it, the important parts with Sham Patel, and try to educate our listeners on that crazy world. Again, college admissions. Scholarships, not scholarships, great topics. You know, the Dr. Bob point of wisdom, first of all, was the exciting explosion of this whole women's basketball phenomenon, Caitlin Clark, the whole world of women's basketball. You know, a quickie story, the late Bob Guider, the great sports therapist, and I were on our way to a girls' softball practice indoors. Walking inside the crack of the bat, the point was these young girls, these athletes, they're fantastic, nowhere more exemplified than what's happened in women's basketball. Just fantastic stuff. But my the pearl of the week, make sure your son or daughter is fit properly, as well as you. 40% of the population is not fit properly. A lot of times it's width. So regardless of the shoe or sport, make sure you fit properly. Baseball Blue Book wanted to bring up the fact, I think it's 50 years, you know, that one of our guests, frequent guests, the orthopedic sports physician of the Yankees, Dr. Chris Ahmad, and his great columns, his educational columns, talking about the whole world of Tommy John surgery. I think it's 50 years and the anniversary, how successful it's been, the challenges, one of them being some Tommy John surgeries done on teenagers because of so much overuse. You know what a big topic that is on the sports doctor. Too much and too much throwing is one of the big challenges, and or too often. We have time for a few emails here. Pat says, my 13-year-old daughter, loves softball. She plays a lot. Since she's 10, 11 years old, her heels have hurt her. You know, there's a large growth center in the back bottom of the heel. It's commonly irritated from running, jumping, anything. Any sports with cleats, and soccer's famous for it. So is softball and baseball, where we're putting 10, 11-year-olds, 9-year-olds with those cleats right underneath the heel. See podiatry. I've been putting orthotics in sports shoes for decades for this problem. When the foot mechanics are part of it, maybe a very high arch, maybe a flat pronated type foot, and all of a sudden that aggravated growth center, which was aggravated just from pounding and running, gets re-irritated and becomes persistently irritated. So many times with these kids, orthotics are magic. By controlling excessive shear forces under the heel, get out of the cleats, get into a multi-nub shoe. Jerry says, I'm a 50-year-old walker. Bunions have been in my family. My mom at 70 years old had surgery. I had surgeries 46 years old. My daughter's 17 years old. Do any of these over-the-counter stretch mechanisms work? I'll tell you, Jerry, what you want to pay attention to. Number one, see, the earlier your daughter's in orthotics, the better. Control as best as possible the mechanical forces that are part of this gradual development of the bunion deformity. And again, sleeping with one of these apparatuses, these kinds of straps, stretching the muscles that are involved can be helpful. So the point I want to make is get under the tutelage of podiatry so you can not only be paying attention to the role of orthotics, proper shoe wear, to try to keep her off the surgical table like you and your mother. We've had great success over the decades by putting young teenagers in orthotics when that's the history. Now, we don't have a time machine, so we don't know who might have had surgery if we never interceded, but the discomfort of the bunion is dramatically improved. So you get that podiatry input if you don't have it already. And pay big attention, insist on orthotics. Hey, everybody, it's the sports doctor. Happy spring. See you next week.